sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Zolak and Bertrand show. No Zolak, no Beetle, no Hardy. It's Arcan, Flynn, Sarge. And now this hour, also Dan Shaughnessy joins us. He's brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at MoheganSun.com. Hello, Dan.
Yeah, I'm like the most regular guy on the show today.
Pretty much.
You know, all you Bum of the Month Club guys.
That's right.
I'll speak for yourself, these two. I am grade A talent.
You're here like bumming sure bum once of every 6 months.
No, but less
we never
is more.
Even see you.
Always keep them wanting, Dan.
Yes.
Like you, right? Like
yes.
You don't want to give them it all and just lay it on the line 5 days a week.
And I say that the most, you know, well-intended.
Condescending.
Yeah, no, condescending.
Right. No,
it's like with all due respect,
it's like, the summer shifts. We all know. We're Bum of the Month Club. It's like a thing. It's the way it goes.
True.
So, well, hey, the
book starts tomorrow.
Sarge,
everybody.
Sarge
is a boy, Dan. That's right.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
That's true. Dan, you had a busy weekend.
I did.
You did.
For me.
You and Mr. Leibovich getting some...
Yeah.
Quality hang time together.
I love that book.
Yeah, I would think you would.
No,
you guys wrote together on what was it on Sunday when that article came out?
I did I talked to him Thursday and the column ran Sunday. Yeah,
and it ran on Sunday. Yeah. For those who haven't gotten to it yet, obviously there was a lot of good info in there and a lot of sort of revelations. I think the one that stuck out to me the most and that you talked about early on, and it was the access. I mean, a lot of access there. How was Leibovich able to get this access?
You know, he's, I don't really know him. I don't know him at all. I think I met him at the White House when the Patriots were there a couple of years ago. And, you know, sort of a well-known New York Times national correspondent for their magazine and did this book on Washington a few years ago, which I did read. It was like an insider book. And it was just, you know, I think there was some bleep after that too. People felt, I don't know, betrayed or they used off the record stuff or whatnot. I think Joe Biden was mad at him, but anyway, it was like it was pretty good insider stuff from D.C. and he's from Newton. He went to Newton South High School. Mm-hmm. His mom still lives here, and you know, he's an adult. You know, he's in his 50s. He's got a family. He's not some, you know, Patriot fanboy, you know, who gets butthurt about every little thing that's written or said, you know.
Right.
So he goes inside and he's emailing Tom for years. I guess they must have connective tissue through big shot people, whatever. And he did a magazine piece which ran the day of the Super Bowl in Houston, the 28-3 game.
Yeah,
the
right, right. Yep.
And I remember in that piece, because Tom's dad says it'll end badly. It always ends badly. And this will end badly. And I thought, well, that's pretty good. Pretty good reveal there. So evidently, going back to 2014, Tom started returning his emails, and this kept going for 4 years, probably still is for all I know. And that in itself is pretty good, because he doesn't...
And that's what the book was supposed to be, first of all.
I think
right?
It started off as a Tom book,
yeah.
And you know, there wasn't enough there, and if you see, there never really is. I mean, when that book's going to be done, Tom's going to do it, and it'll be really good, and he can tell everything, and there's so much to tell. But, you know, people don't want a whole book on TB12 or The Method or... You know, kind of pushing the agenda, selling stuff.
Right.
I mean, that's nuts. And I think he probably saw...
He didn't want to write that book.
He wasn't getting, like, you know, like, real deep heart, deep to the bone stuff. But he was getting enough. And, you know, the notion that it was Bob Kraft who put the Make America Great Again hat in his locker.
Right.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
And so, stuff like that. And then Kraft, you know, Bob lets him in. And then Mark Leibovich said, you know, I'm kind of a, you know, I'm a Jewish guy from Newton. And, you know, we grew up, you know, he's not as rich as Bob Kraft, but he felt like they understood each other, were in the same circles and could relate. And, you know, Bob Kraft's a pretty friendly guy. And I think that he felt, here's a big shot from the New York Times and you know, let's let him in. And he was let in there too. And so there's quite a bit of reveal there, and it's so characteristic where Bob talks about his football playing days at Columbia, and just like it very much rings true of you know, my limited experience going back 20-25 years there. Of course, Belichick is the only one with the arm bar, you know, so he doesn't get anything from Bill. You know, the consigliere bears, you know, it's just not happening. And you know, good for Bill to, you know, keep the wall up there, and he was able to do that. But then, like, the rest of the book's only like 30-40% Patriots. I mean,
right.
there's a lot of Jerry Jones and Arthur Blank and
Roger Goodell.
You know, the consortium of of guys who own these teams, just the boobery, as Tom Curran put it really nicely. It's a big reveal, and it's hilarious.
So the access to the rest of the league, it's just people he knew, and they just... Did you ever ask him, like, when he got in this access, and you had the Patriots access in the NFL, did they know what he was writing? Or maybe they
thought, I don't think so.
Or maybe they thought, like, I mean, hey, this could be good, the inner workings of the NFL, but it turns out that the inner workings...
it's a clown show.
It's a clown show.
And Jerry Jones couldn't possibly. I mean, he's got a big ego, and he probably has a few every now and then, and he's fun. But like the one that I think the same stuff is happening in Dallas, it's happening here, which is, in the aftermath they're not that happy, and too much was revealed, and like Jones, like he asked him, would you rather, because he's in the Hall of Fame, would you trade that for another ring or something to that effect, which is more important? And it's Hall of Fame, because Jerry Jones, he's Mr. Ego, and he's got a couple of rings from a long time ago, and Barry Switzer and all that. So, I think that Bob Kraft is asked the same question and kind of gives the correct answer. I'm not sure of that. But Jones did not, and it's just like your fan base doesn't want to hear that. That's not what they want to hear. And there's a lot of, there's kind of like interpersonal, I don't want to say sex stuff, but just like, all these young women, and it's a little sketchy stuff all over the place. And it started, I told Mark Lee, which is it started to read like a Dan Jenkins book after a while, like just the good old boy stuff and these rich guy owners and their club and this place for the meetings isn't good enough because they don't have this kind of, perks and this kind of that. And
right.
So it's just, he's a good writer. It's an entertaining read. It's not like there's bombshells. Like we don't find out why Malcolm Butler didn't play.
Sure.
We don't get the deep dive on Jimmy Garoppolo getting traded. That's kind of stuff's not in there. But I thought that, as these books go, and if you like to harpoon Roger Goodell, as you say, that's all in there for you too.
I think we all suspected, that the owners and Goodell, like, there's some buffoonery going on.
Oh my God!
Right?
Yeah, totally.
And I think
boobery.
It's boobery.
Yeah.
Boobery. Boobery. Yeah. Is the word.
Good one.
Want to get it right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But I guess the book validate. I mean, there's something to that, like bombshells. But still, you have it in writing that's been documented that validates everything we thought that they try to no, it's behind the curtain. But when you take the curtain back, no, it is boobery. These guys are not these, like, it's not this well-oiled machine. You're like, how does this thing even go?
And he's clearly, in the Brady inner circle to the point where, people aren't always named, but, like, that Tom's devastated when Bob Kraft, falls on his sword in San Francisco, gives it up at the league meetings in 2015. I mean, that was kind of a really bad moment for Tom Brady. And, it kind of explains... And as the author says, they're leaving signs all over the place. And I know you guys were talking about it today, time versus time, and the next set of signals that we're going to get on this stuff and just the alignments. And, 19 years is a long time for owner, coach, quarterback to all be together.
Sure.
We all understand that. And, again, as I keep saying, it doesn't change them from getting where they want to go. But I do think it's real, and I think eventually, as Tom Brady Sr. said, it'll end badly because of that stuff.
So if Kraft was the main, point of contact here for Leibowitz, Was there anything? I know you said that he doesn't think that Kraft believes that he was betrayed or that there was anything sort of taken off the record. He said, "No, I think I did everything right." Do you think Kraft feels that way?
Oh, of course not. No one ever does.
Okay.
And there is an exchange. It was while he was working for the magazine and it's a very harmless thing. I mean, where Bob's talking about his love for New York and he's got the apartment.
Oh, right. Yeah,
he's got the apartment there and he loves all things New York. And I think this is why he's impressed by Leibowitz being a New York Times guy and substantive political writer. And Bob makes a remark about, that Boston's just a village compared to New York. And Stacy, who's always around, kind of monitoring, and God bless him, says, well, could we make that off the record? And I think that in that moment, it is taken from the record. Because in Leibowitz, it's for the magazine. But then when he writes the book, he uses the exchange. That's an unusual, not everybody would be cool with that. If you say to me, can we make this off the record? Then I write about the exchange of you saying, well, let's make this off the record. It's a dynamic, but in Leibowitz's world, you could do that for the book as long as you honored it for the magazine. And again, who cares if you're saying Boston's a village compared to New York?
It is.
I mean, what's the big deal? It's hardly
obviously
gets anybody's feelings hurt.
That's
I would hope.
Well, how people would become very defensive of their town,
of course,
and
their team.
And if you said something about New York from Boston,
yeah.
So if you're the owner of a team that is supported by New England, right?
Right.
It's not what you want to get across. I understand that. But, right, yeah. You shouldn't be offended by
no,
it.
No, I would hope our fans are mature enough at this point to, that's okay. You can say we're a village compared to New York. We are, and we're proud of it.
I would say, yeah, in a lot of ways. You know, yeah. We don't want to be exactly like New York. One thing Leibovich sort of pointed out in the piece you guys had was how, like, he compared it to the Steelers and how they had their dynasty, yeah. But no one hated the Steelers because they weren't trying to trademark catchphrases and stuff like that. It was that, I mean, was that sort of that just seemed like the author sort of opining there, right?
Well, and he's a fan. Yeah. He's a Patriot fan. He comes to this as a fan, but the more he learns, he kind of, you know, he starts hearing from all the Patriot fans, and he realizes what that's like. We all know what that's like.
Right.
And he's hilarious talking about, you know, that he says nobody hated the Niners, nobody hated the Steelers. He didn't have the Rooneys grabbing the microphone to, you know, drop off some pearl of wisdom that's going to be, you know, chiseled into concrete like a week later. And he said, when you walk into the Patriot gift shop, you hear, you know, we are all Patriots. And it's like, he said, it's like walking into the Gettysburg gift shop and hearing the Gettysburg address by Abraham Lincoln. It's like, just like that they copyright and brand everything. And they do. They brand Drive for Five. It's like the John Calipari refused to lose.
Right.
It's like, please. It's like the stuff, these aren't all pearls here that you need to like stamp and last in perpetuity.
No, I understand that. And I think that, you know, for a lot of people, that is why the Patriots kind of rub them the wrong way. Brady being, you know, such a big star, sure. And sort of Belichick being this surly guy. But I guess overall, you know, the thing I think most people were looking for were sort of some bombshells. There weren't really that many. There wasn't anything in there that you look at and think, oh my God, it's all going to come crashing down here tomorrow, or oh my God, these guys can't coexist anymore. I mean, everything seems to sort of be on the normal track, right?
Well,
the normal track, but like they'll play a normal season this year.
Well, this is what I wrote. Everybody gets tired of this.
Yeah.
And I know the tomato can, the whole thing. I mean, all this tension at the top, whatever, which I believe to be real, it doesn't prevent them from getting where they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
They have stable ownership. They have a great coach and a great quarterback. And in the AFC in 2018, that'll get you a long way because the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Jets all still suck. And there was absolutely no threat that they could be challenged for like first place in the division.
Well, I don't know if you heard, but the Dolphins just signed Brandon Bolden, so watch out.
Changing everything.
Team's ace.
And again, and you know, the reader, like fans, Patriot fans, they get their feelings bruised so easily. They're so defensive about every little thing. So there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, this is a fact. They've won the division 15 out of the last 17 years, 14 out of 15 years. They've had 8 straight first round buys. That's not their fault. And no one is saying that the AFC East doesn't measure up against the other divisions. Because when you use the Patriots' numbers with the other three, of course they measure up with the other divisions. They're as good or better because the Patriots are running the table against everybody. Patriots are great. But unlike every other team, in a 15-year period, they know that the others aren't getting any better. New quarterbacks, new coaches, you're not going to be challenged in that area. That doesn't exist for anybody else. And again, I'm not punishing the Patriots for it, but until the narrative changes, I'm not changing. That's the deal. I mean, do we seriously think that the Dolphins, Jets, or Bills could challenge them in their division, even if they're having an okay year?
No.
You don't believe in Nathan Peterman?
I don't.
No?
That's a joke.
I think the fact that Darnold's starting for the Jets, that could be, as we move forward,
yeah,
three years.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of the short term.
Got to put a shit around them, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. All right, we got to take a break here. 617-779-0985. You want to talk to Dan, you want to talk to us. Shaughnessy with his Leibovich article over the weekend. We're talking about that. Got some other topics to get to as well right after this.
Just because you're at work doesn't mean you have to miss a story. Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That is your phone number. Arcan and Flynn in for Beetle and Zoe. Dan Shaughnessy in the house as well. Here comes Sarge.
Anytime, Sarge.
There we go, Sarge. Sarge sneaking in under the cameras.
My rule is my show starts when I sit down. You got to earn that. No, my show. And it's a show to you, but my part of the show starts when I sit down. You got to earn that, Sarge.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
I mean, you know, Super Bowl champion right here.
Damn right. Yeah, you're close. See? You're right there, but you gotta get over that hump before you just come walking into my sight line, too.
I hear you.
Because we saw the top of your head, because I was like,
no, did it make it?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So now, right.
Sorry, NBC Sports Boston.
So you take up
Dan's face and mine. And
it didn't cover the fro, though.
Viewing on TV, Sarge. I mean, yeah. Let's go.
Too much light on top of the head after the surgery. You got to be careful.
And it happens. Yeah. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Dan Shaughnessy is in with us. He talked to Mark Leibovich over the week. I actually talked with him last week. The article came out on Sunday. And there was one aspect of it that, in his book anyway, that I wanted to talk to you about a little bit. And that also ties in with something Mike Florio posted. Peter King actually had one of those Football Morning in America columns. He asked the simple question of whether folks approve or disapprove of the job that Roger Goodell has done since he became the commissioner back in 2006. 28,000 people responded. 79% said no.
That's kind of a layup. I mean, but again, of the owners, how many would say no? And that's all that matters to them.
I'd say 95% would say yes.
Right. And again, we all agree we could be the NFL commissioner and they'd still make as much money. We could probably do a better job. You know, so it's like it's a one car funeral. I mean, you can't screw it up. So, you know, we get that. But I think that, you know, so it doesn't matter. And it's almost like that's his job, is to be the guy that everybody hates, to get the 80% disapproval rating, to take all the, you know, bullets and all that stuff.
That's so the owners don't get it.
Yeah, right. That's
what
he's there
for. Most commissioners, right, if you ask about it, you know, since maybe Adam Silver at the NBA, I think he's like, but, you know, Bettman, they'd say, sure, he stinks. But I think in Goodell's case, it's very obvious the boobery that he has, whether it's from Ray Rice to Deflategate to even the, as far as the incognito and with the Martin kid, the bullying, all these different episodes that have
Adrian
happened.
Adrian Peterson.
The
kicker. Who was the kicker on the Giants? Josh Brown. I mean, there's so many
on
examples.
On.
And it never really stops. I mean, it gets worse and worse every time. They're never proactive. They always react to these things. And they react poorly almost every single time they have an opportunity to go out and try and deal with something like this.
Well, Flynn knows this way better than I do, but here's what I think the NFL owners care about, that he wins the collective bargaining every time against them. And they do it to themselves.
If you're an owner, though, that is the most important thing. They rolled the players up and they swept them under the rug in that collective bargaining agreement. And by the way, and I said this, right or wrong what happened to Brady, but you know who gave Goodell that power? The players.
They did.
And they want to bitch and moan about it and they want to complain, but at the end of the day, it's written there, he has that power. And he has won that in court.
Well,
so the owners, even if Jerry Jones is pissed or Bob Kraft is pissed, you do not want to take that power away from
They love it. They love it.
Because at the end of the day, most of those things are probably done in some back room.
Well,
every once in a while, you got to fall on the sword as an owner to make it seem like this is fair or he's impartial, but he's not.
And individual franchises take their beating and get mad, whether it's New Orleans or here or whoever. But the other ones all agree on the punishments at the time until it's your turn, and then you don't like it. But the other 29, they all like it. So this is just kind of the way that it works, and he's happy to take those bullets. Fact is, Deflategate, for all the bad publicity, oh, they're jokes, what are clowns, this is unfair punishment, all the stuff like that. Around here, it was like, oh, this will drive Goodell down. This will be the end of him. It made him stronger because he won in court after the nitwit fanboy judge, you know, Richard Berman, got his pom-poms in line and made the ruling. He got flipped by his superior bench, the Court of Appeals, whatever they were, the 2 out of 3, and the en banc appeal, whatever that was. And that... what that did was it enhanced Goodell's powers so that next time maybe they don't have to get challenged. He can continue to do what he wants to do, dole out unfair punishments, you know, be the judge, jury, execution, all those things. He has the power to do it. And they go to collective bargaining. When's the next one? How far out is it?
2022. A couple of years. And they're going to use that. And they're going to dangle this Goodell power independent thing. And all the while, they're trying to get this. And the players and the NFL, they're going to jump all over this and they're going to win again. Like, okay, so now we go to some impartial thing about suspension for, you know, a PED abuse or some sort of like if you get arrested for something or domestic abuse, like, all right, we'll go to the independent
personal
counsel.
Conduct policy,
personal conduct,
that,
and you go to there. But at the end of the day, they're still going to make their money and they're going to roll them on something else.
Right. And again, we all know this is not Goodell's magic powers to win in court or whatever. His powers are he presides over a sport in which the players will never strike because the careers are 2 or 3 years. No one's going to sit out one of those years in the interest of the greater good so that future generations of players have it better. They're going to say, no, I got to play. I got to get mine now while I'm here. They know that. They exploit that. They get him to sign these crappy agreements, and the thing perpetuates itself through no genius of Roger Goodell.
Right. And one thing about the NFL and what everyone always says is the reason why the NFL Players Union gets beat up so much is because there's so many players, and it's hard to get them all pulling in the same direction. Guys don't want to forego their careers or miss a year or anything like that. But there's a lot of players in Major League Baseball, too, and Donald Fear somehow got them all in the same direction, and they killed the Major League. I mean, they all get every single dime of that money. So why can't the NFL do that?
Well, again, because careers aren't 2 or 3 years in Major League Baseball. You can get guys, you know, they're talking about, not everybody, but guys expect to play long enough to sit out. They can sit out half a year. They'll do it. And they had great leadership. They had leadership from U.S. Steel, Marvin Miller, Donald Fear. Players had leadership from ex-players. Always a bad idea. Baseball's doing that now with Tony Clark, so you got to watch that. But they had the ability to shut down. I mean, they shut down. They didn't have a World Series in 1994. Nobody likes that, but it gives the players, they have the hammer. When you are willing to do that, you gain some leverage. And NFL players, and I don't blame them, are not willing to do that.
Well, I think the size of the union in the NFL, but there is that issue of injury. Like, realistically, right? Yeah. If you strike as a, you mentioned longevity of career, and part of that is physically, right? As a baseball player, you mature later. Like, what is your prime? Like 30, 31, dance? Like, guys could. In football, 30 is too old.
Done.
And there's that, the specter of career injury is there. And if you miss a whole year at a certain salary and you say, okay, I don't need it, you come back next year, you blow out your ACL, you're done.
Yeah.
That, so, you know, there's that fear factor to it.
Absolutely. And again, it's just the nature of the game allows them to be.
But here's what I will say this. Does the, and you know the finances of Major League Baseball better than I do. The also now in today's game, the money from the TV deals, right? Because there's only so many things that people will watch on TV.
Right.
And those are live sporting events. As an NFLPA and a player with half a brain, you realize these owners are so protected with these TV deals that they get paid whether you play or not.
Right.
So they have something to fall back on.
It's the perfect product.
They got to know in baseball in 94 if the money was there like it is for football now. I you know, that probably you can answer that. But, I mean, just the fact that the owners are like, you know what, we're getting all this cash. The TV people can't back out, and we're making money this year regardless of they play or not.
And they have revenue sharing, which is what baseball never have to the degree the NFL does, where, as you say, the TV money, the Kansas City Chiefs get the same TV money as the New York Football Giants. Does not happen in baseball. It's local packages, Kansas City Royals, small market, New York Yankees. That's the disparity. And that stuff gets exploited, and you know.
Well, what was that? The Packers, right? It's a publicly traded, right?
Right.
And,
yeah.
And what do they make? They made $250 million before they sold a ticket,
sure,
parking spot, or sold the beer. So, but, I mean, that right there, you can protect yourself, and you can hold the line when you know you're going to get that.
Every NFL team, no matter Jacksonville, no matter how small the market, they share the TV money, the national TV money. They share that equally. That's the big dough. They can play in front of empty stadiums. We all know that. You know, the rest of it's just, you know, tips and soy sauce. It'll add on to it. You can make more from this, but your base is covered with the revenue sharing of the TV contracts from the networks.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We'll continue with Shaughnessy here, get into some Red Sox talk. First, we got the headlines from Sarge, and we're right back.
Sports Hub headlines.
Red Sox and the Braves play in the middle of three tonight in Atlanta. 7:30 start time with Rick Porcello getting the start. Yesterday, Red Sox beat the Braves 8-2, and they got an 8.5-game lead over the Yankees for first in the AL East standings after New York lost in Oakland. Former Philly star Ryan Howard announcing his retirement today in the Players Tribune. And Howard, 38 years old, former National League MVP, has not played in the majors since 2016. Patriots on the practice field in about an hour ahead of Sunday's season opener against the Texans. And Bill Belichick and company ready to go up against Houston's defense led by J.J. Watt.
J.J. is a great player. Very talented. He's got a great motor and very instinctive. He's a very smart player, as well as one that has outstanding physical skill. So
we'll always expect our best and prepare for it.
And now former Patriot running back Brandon Bolden, who was in Miami yesterday visiting with the Dolphins, expected to sign at least a one-year deal with the team today. That according to Adam Schefter. Some Bruins news. They're holding their annual golf tournament today. Captain Zdeno Chara confirming that he will not be traveling with the team to China for their preseason game with Calgary next week. And a big payday for former Bruin Blake Wheeler, signing a five-year, $41.25 million contract extension with the Winnipeg Jets. Headlines are brought to you by the Boston area campus of Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Get in the game. Visit GoCSB.com for more details. I'm Mike Riley on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update in 30 minutes.
Hot takes.
I am Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Wrong song.
Oh. Zoe and Beetle, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Yeah, fly ball lifted into right field. Backing up, and we can track that one down at the base of the wall. That's the ball game. The Red Sox win this one by a final score of 8-2. Kinsler should have a big smile. He's right in the thick of it, driving in three runs. Long afternoon, TC. A very fruitful one. The Red Sox back in the win column.
Yes, back in the win column after an ugly split with the White Sox. Red Sox paced the Braves yesterday on the holiday. Ian Kinsler tagging everybody. Arcand in for Beetle here. Mike Flynn in for Zolak. Shaughnessy's here. Sarge is here as well. Let's talk a little Red Sox, boys. This has been a, interesting stretch, I'd say. Not exactly setting the world on fire by any means, but when you see you know what's left of this rotation right now after David Price took that line drive off his wrist, Chris Sale still hasn't come back yet, and the rotation's been struggling, I think is probably the nice way of putting it. Is there any reason, Dan, in your mind to think that this is going to sort of haunt them in the month of September, a time when obviously rosters expand and you can kind of do some different things?
It's not what I'm seeing the last 2 weeks that it's got to be. I've been the same with these guys all along. I'm not getting too high when they're great or too low when they're struggling a little bit. The fundamental things that they have to do are still exist for them, and they're going to have to prove when they get there. They can't do anything about that until they get there. And yes, you referenced the starting pitching, but I mean, you know, everybody's going to come together at the end of September, and the Sox as much as anybody else. They're 50 games over 500. It's an amazing year. The standards here are different. You need to do it in the postseason. We've seen that with these guys, and there's going to be enormous pressure going into that first round for them. But I'm not reading too much into what I've seen the last few weeks. Sale's going to pitch. I wondered this weekend, because Price is going to start the game Friday, evidently, with Houston. They probably don't want Sale to Houston to look at him or vice versa.
Yeah, I guess not.
They may wait a few more days on that.
I think Sale probably with the Blue Jays is after that.
I mean, if he's really hurt and they're hiding this, then they're screwed no matter what.
Yep.
And it's over. And I don't believe that. That's too draconian. I'm not going to go there. But the issues with the bullpen, with hitting in October, with the fact that none of the starters have ever won a postseason start, those things are going to... they'll carry them into the playoffs. October 5th, Friday, they're playing either the Yankees or the A's. Best of five. That's going to be great.
I'm with Dan. The short-term issues, look, you're still up 8.5, And you have to reel it, right? No Sale, no Price. There are dog days of summer. What was the Dodgers, right, a couple years ago? They had the best record. Remember, they were just killing everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And they went in this major tailspin. Well, they end up getting to the World Series. Now, there are bigger issues that, you know, whether you mention the ability of... say they're all healthy in terms of Price and Sale, like these guys pitching under the lights of the playoffs. Like, are they finally going to give you six or seven innings, right? Certainly there are issues in the bullpen. You know, Kimbrel has struggled. So there are big picture issues, and it's the playoffs, and it's like, all right, are they elevate the game? That's a legitimate question. But in terms of, you know, where they're at, 500, they had that what did they lose, 7 out of 8? I think that's, you know, listen, you're 50 games over 500. You're up 8.5. You have some stoppers in your rotation. Price has been as good as anybody.
You don't have them right now.
But I mean, they got hurt, right? Some guys like Betts, you know, like not hitting, Benintendi struggle a little bit. So I think that's natural fluctuations of the season. Listen, they're still 8.5 up. But big picture things, Dan's right. Like, it's going to come down to the playoffs. And I don't think it's, our expectations are higher than anybody, certainly for the team. But I mean, if you were a Yankees fan or Houston or Cleveland, if your team, you know, won the division and got bumped in the first round 2 years in a row, I think the expectation of any of those fan bases would be like, well, okay, it's great. We appreciate the regular season. This is historic. But at the end of the day, what are you going to do in the playoffs?
Yeah.
So that big picture question is there. But in terms of what they're doing right now, I think it's just that time of the year. They have some guys hurt. They're struggling. I think you're right. They're kind of going to figure it out at the end. And then it's going to come down to Oakland or New York for a five-game series, winning that series. And having your starters go deep in the games, timely hits, and they take that next step in the playoffs, which they haven't to this point.
Yeah, no, it's true. They haven't. And they also didn't do anything at the other deadline. I mean, there was another deadline here that came and went with the Red Sox not really doing anything to address their biggest problem, which is the bullpen. And, you know, it's not like a lot of things has. Some teams made some moves. What, the Indians pick up Josh Donaldson and, like, a couple other things there. But the Red Sox...
Yanks got McCutcheon.
The game on Sunday, and he was running out there. I'm like, did I miss something? McCutcheon. I was so confused for about 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, they picked him up.
Picking up all the All-Stars from 5 years ago and making sure
At this point, you're just...
I'll take that over. The Red Sox didn't do a blessed thing at the trade deadline. They did not. I mean, they got Eovaldi, but they didn't get anybody in that bullpen, and they didn't do it again now. I mean, they got Eovaldi, two opportunities.
Eovaldi, Kinsler, and Pierce in the month of July.
Well, Pierce has done well. Kinsler was great yesterday. He started off well, and he got hurt, and then he'll get back to that. I mean, energized veteran.
I love Kinsler. He's 36 years old. I mean, but he's closer to what he was than most guys when they're 36. I mean, he's not ever going to be that guy again. He can really help.
Did he get hurt that first game? That first game, right? He was like 3-for-3, and then he strained his hamstring or something.
Yeah, something happened with one of his legs. I don't remember. But he's back playing now. Had a good game yesterday, and I think that folks are going to like him. He's anchored the right side of the infield for them.
And that's fine, but I'd love someone to anchor this bullpen a little bit. Just anybody, you know? I mean, even the guys who I felt like haven't gotten enough exposure and maybe deserved a few more chances and just get someone in that role in the eighth inning. Like Brazier, for example. I thought, all right, well, he's been good lately. Let's see him in some high-leverage situations. And he's given up runs left and right. I mean, there's nobody left. Everybody has tried and everybody has failed, it seems like, in that entire bullpen to be the setup man. And you have nothing. I mean, you really don't have anyone that you can trust.
Well, they have 4 weeks to figure it out. And, again, Eovaldi and, Eddie Rodriguez, I think, you know, one of those two is going to be in the bullpen.
Great.
And there's a chance Stephen Wright could be in the bullpen, which I don't like. But, again, people that have not been out there, they're not going to use five starters. So after you get past Price, Sale, Porcello, either Erod or Eovaldi is the fourth starter, and then the other one is in the bullpen. Hopefully that guy is your two-inning guy to get you the bridge to Kimbrel.
So do you just wait until the playoffs start and then try a guy out there? Or are they going to start?
No, I mean, I think this is what you're seeing.
You rotate people in those spots. I mean, Eovaldi has to keep making starts. If they want him to be a high-leverage reliever, don't they have to start, like, trying him out in that role before they just thrust him out
there
in October?
They got 4 weeks to do, and then there's really not many. There's no more high-leverage games for them. They got, 24, 25 games.
Well, not yet, but they got seven games against the Yankees in the last 2 weeks of the season. I mean,
they're not high-leverage for the Red Sox. I mean, again, 8.5 game lead. This thing's over. You know, the division's over. That's not in play. And the week that they're in New York, they could actually clinch that week. That they're playing, because it's like 8 or 9 games to go. And if they have a lead of 8 or 9 games, they could clinch while they're there. So they're not playing to win, to get to 110 or whatever those things are. They're playing to get things right for October. They get to do that. Cleveland gets to do that. Nobody else in the league gets to do that.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Taking your Red Sox calls here with Dan Shaughnessy. Quick break, and we're right back after this.
Miss something?
So what happens now?
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now, back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
Six one seven 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 nine zero ninety eight five is your phone number here. Arcan and Flynn in for Beetle and Zoe. Dan Shaughnessy in, of course, like he is every Tuesday. We'll get to Dan's dates next hour. Get back to the Patriots as well. A couple other topics to get to with Dan. But in the meantime, let's get to your phone calls. This is special for me and for all the listeners. Blair is in Maine with a thought on the Red Sox. Hello, Blair.
Hey, what's going on? What kind of gets me worried is that the play, not the not the Patriots, the Red Sox
right.
play somebody good in the playoffs. What do you think if they play a terrific team in the playoffs, like maybe Oakland or Colorado, somebody that would actually play them tough? What do you think the Red Sox would do if they play somebody tough in the playoffs? In the playoffs, you know? You get where I'm going at?
I do.
In the playoffs.
Talking yeah. about?
They wouldn't play Colorado till the World Series, Blair. They'd have to wait at least until the very end.
So would it be the Yankees then? Would it be the Yankees? Who would they play in the first round, really?
It's a 50-50 chance, Blair. It'll be either the Yankees or the Oakland A's. And again, you're supposed to play someone good in the playoffs. That's why they're the playoffs.
Well, right. Listen.
Yes, I get it.
I think the issue isn't that they don't have talent. I think they have a roster or a lineup that could cover them like they have in the last couple of years, right? I mean, you have two MVP candidates.
Yeah.
Benintendi has been good. So they have a lineup, and they can hit their way out of some mistakes by their pitching, okay, which they couldn't do. The second part of this is we know that, I mean, Price for, what, was it eight starts or something? He was as good as anybody in baseball.
Right.
And he has a history of a Cy Young. Chris Sale was one of the best pitchers in baseball, right? Porcello has won a Cy Young Award. I don't think you question... They're talented guys, okay? So if they pitch, they're capable of. They pitch to what they're capable of. They could beat anybody, okay? So they have that. The problem is they haven't done it in the playoffs, right? There's... You get to that level. It's of course, it's you're playing better teams because it's the playoffs. So,
right.
You know, it's going to be better coaches. Now it's Francona, and they're analyzing how you pitch, and they're going to dissect what, you know, your patterns and all that kind of stuff. So it makes it more difficult. But their issue is Price has just been horrific. Sale wasn't good, right? Some of these guys didn't get timely hits in the playoffs. Their regular season performance, which happens to a lot of players, didn't translate to the playoffs. So they have talent. Well, what do I think? I think they can win. I think they can win everything. We need to see it. I don't know what makes this year different than the year before. They certainly have more wins. I think the lineup is better.
Yeah, JD Martinez wasn't here.
So JD Martinez and Cora.
This team's different from last year.
Cora and Martinez are the two big changes.
Yeah.
They made a big difference. I mean, can Cora push the right buttons, whatever it is?
I would say this team's different from last year, but not that different from 2016. 2016, I think, in this team, it's similar in a lot of ways. David Ortiz was your J.D. Martinez. Of course, the manager was still John Farrell at the time. Do you think that Alex Cora, the upgrade from Farrell to Cora, Dan, could manifest itself into some sort of playoff success that Farrell wasn't able to bring out of these guys?
Well, again, I mean, Farrell won a World Series in 2013,
right.
Fairness to him. But I think that, you know, there seems to be a vibe in the clubhouse where they like this guy more. And, hey, guys want to play well. Guys want to play well in the postseason, so they're always trying their best up there. But I think that they just feel a little more that he's with them. You know, he's more relating to the younger guys, more interaction, more communication, that kind of thing. Guys like that, maybe they'll respond to it, maybe they won't. I mean, you're still going to be facing really good pitching in the playoffs, really good teams. You're not going to have these meatball bullpens that they face when they play Chicago, and they have these jailbreaks late in the game. I mean, that's not going to happen in postseason.
With Chris Sale in particular, I mean, Price, we'll see how the wrist heals and if he's able to go back and be his normal self. But with Sale, I think even with the injury, we know that he can pitch through it because we saw him do it. We saw him go out and pitch in that Baltimore game. Probably shouldn't have, but he did, and he looked great. You know, 5 innings, 11 strikeouts. Like, he was top-notch in that game. I feel like the whole point of what they're doing with Chris Sale, Dan, is to just get him so they can ride him like, you know, Madison Bumgarner in the postseason. Is that realistic? I mean, is that a realistic possibility?
I mean, they've spent the whole year trying to manage his innings, the wear and tear. It didn't work out particularly well when he turned up lame in August.
Right.
And now they're trying to manage that. So, yeah, he used too many bullets to get to 300 and all that nonsense last year, and there was not much left. And historically, he's been a guy who, you know, late August, September, October, has had more struggles. So they're really hoping that changes this year. Certainly, he hasn't been overworked when they get into the postseason. It's going to be a question of, is he healthy, and can he overcome the fact that he lost them both last year? He was 0-2 in that series. He had a bad start and an okay relief appearance in which he picked up the loss. But for him, until he does it, you know, we talked to him this spring. He said, yeah, I learned a lesson. The playoffs are a bad time to suck.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, that was the first time for him basically the entire season. I feel like with Sale, you know, you look at the multiple DL stints and sort of think, well, try and manage the guy. Try and cut down on the innings. Try and cut down on the pitch counts. But has that ever really worked? Like, you know, with Buchholz, it didn't work. With, like, Steven Strasburg, it didn't work. With Tim Lincecum, it didn't work. With Jabba Chamberlain, it didn't work. Like, they tried it with all these people. They all still got hurt, and most of them ended up having Tommy John surgery anyway. So it's like, what's the point?
Well, here's the thing. Like, you how does Sale feel about it? Because remember in spring training, he didn't want to back off the approach. And he's been a horse. Now, he hasn't pitched as well in September in the playoffs. Not that, like, Chicago, the playoffs were a big issue, but he still put up the innings, right? And now the 1 year where even in spring training, right, they pulled him back. Remember his earlier starts in the year? It was pitch count, not a lot of innings, and the guy ends up getting hurt anyway. So he's got to be thinking like, you know, I train my body a certain way. Now you pull me back, and now I'm lame. Now I'm hurt. Now maybe I can fight my way through it, but I never had an issue with the arm. Now, whether that's true or not because of, you know, the way he pitched and how they held him back, could you just say like, at this point he's getting older? And it was inevitable that he was going to be sore. But as a starting pitcher and a guy, Sale, who's done something a certain way, now he's hurt. I mean, he's got to be scratching his head about the Red Sox method. I don't know how much that affects him going into the playoffs. But you're right, though. Like, they pull these guys back and end up getting hurt anyway. Like, what's the point?
I think he's been okay with the approach this year. But there's always deeper levels of this. It's not just pitching well in the playoffs. He's in his walk year next year.
Yeah.
And he has pretty much been injury free throughout his career. So nobody wants to start to see this stuff creep up or do something stupid at the end of the year where now you're damaged goods going into your walk year and you don't get to cash in and get the David Price contract or what have you. He's a good bargain right now. If he were to pitch next year like he did last year, the sky's the limit. If he's not an injured guy who's got that kind of a track record, he can break the bank. But that's very much in play for him over the course of between now and this time next year.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We have no commercials here, just the headlines from Sarge. We'll get back into it with Dan. Some Patriots talk, Tom V. Time, Colin Kaepernick, now the new face of Nike. We got some other things as well. Right after these, just the headlines here, no spots, and we're right back.